You're listening to the Eyes on Conservation podcast, episode 8. Welcome to the Eyes on Conservation podcast, where we bring you engaging conversations about wildlife conservation issues from all across the globe. I'm your host, Matt Podolsky. On today's episode of the show, we're talking with Greg Kaltenecker. Greg is the executive director of the Intermountain Bird Observatory, a Boise-based nonprofit organization that is dedicated to both bird research and education and public outreach programs related to birds. Intermountain Bird Observatory was our very first partner organization with the Eyes on Conservation series. So we actually started shooting for the EOC doc about the IBO bird migration research site up at Lucky Peak way back in the fall of 2011. And in a lot of ways, this first project really shaped the direction that the series ended up going in. The Intermountain Bird Observatory, as you'll hear in this interview, puts a lot of emphasis on education and outreach programs that run alongside their research programs. And I think they found a balance here in which the research component informs the education component and vice versa, which is very neat. This balance between research and education is something that we focused on in a number of our EOC video since then. And I am extremely grateful to Greg and all the other folks at IBO for being so willing to work with us during the infancy of this project. That said, the folks at IBO have been up to a lot since we last interviewed them 3 years back for that video. Greg's got some exciting updates on some of their new projects, so let's jump right into that interview.
I'm here with Greg Kaltenecker, who is the executive director of the Intermountain Bird Observatory. We're actually here in the Intermountain Bird Observatory office in a little impromptu radio studio that I set up here right next to Greg's office. How are you doing today, Greg?
Great. Thanks, Matt, for inviting me to do this.
Yeah, you bet. So the first thing I kind of want to just get a perspective on here is what the mission of the Intermountain Bird Observatory is.
Sure. I'll kind of paraphrase our mission, okay? It's basically to contribute to the conservation of migratory birds through a kind of a unique combination of doing research and environmental education and outreach. We really strive at every step of the way, or every chance we can, to involve the public and conduct education and outreach and really provide kind of a unique experience in nature for the public, especially children.
Fantastic. And yeah, those of us at Wildlands, the video that we produced about the work that Intermountain Bird Observatory does, was actually one of the very first videos that we produced that has become a part of this Eyes on Conservation short documentary series that we produced. I think actually that short video we did was the very first video we produced that's become a part of that series. So we spent a lot of time working with IBO, Intermountain Bird Observatory, spent a lot of time up at your Lucky Peak migration site, and it's just amazing what's going on up there and how you guys are integrating the research and the education components and how well meshed together they are. It's really a fantastic program that you guys are doing, and obviously you guys are doing more than just the Lucky Peak migration work, but that was sort of our focus in the video, and it's a great spot to visit up there for folks who live in the Boise area.
Well, thank you, Matthew. Thank you for that, and thank you for producing that video. It was really well done, and I thought perfectly reflected what we're all about and what we do up there, both in terms of the research and the education.
Thanks. So my next question here is, I'm just curious to know a bit about sort of the story of how IBO was founded. What was sort of how and why was the inspiration for
sure.
The founding organization?
Sure. It started over 20 years ago. I think it was 1992 or 1993, back when I was a graduate student at Boise State in the Raptor Research Program. I was sort of finishing up my studies on wintering bald eagles, And we took on as a class project in, I think it was the raptor ecology course that me and several other students had, to try and find a raptor migration site somewhere in southern Idaho. And about 10 of us students designed a project to look at several different mountain ranges and different peaks all over the southern part of Idaho. And we ended up finding, you know, the greatest number and best diversity of migrating raptors right here on the Boise Ridge, right outside of Boise. So in the beginning, that's all we really wanted to do, was find a place where we could view and maybe trap migrating raptors as part of the, you know, maybe try and integrate it into the raptor research program to let students gain more experience, you know, in raptor identification and hands-on work with raptors. But we soon discovered, you know, right away that the site had very good numbers of migrating raptors, you know, worthy of setting up a long-term migration monitoring site. So we did.
Fantastic. And yeah, I mean, that project is still ongoing today, 20 mm-hmm. years later. And it's sort of become the backbone of this nonprofit organization, the Intermountain Bird Observatory. So this Lucky Peak migration site, I mean, I guess you sort of explained, you know, why it's a special place for migratory birds. But what makes this research, I mean, you mentioned that, you know, you sort of recognize the importance of this one spot for migratory birds and decided it was worthy of this long-term migration research program. But what is it that's so important about the research project itself and the data that you guys are collecting?
Well, I think it's important to collect long-term monitoring data on bird migration, because all of the birds that we're monitoring, they're not flocking birds. They're not easy to count or, you know, inventory at other times of the year. And really, migration is a very short window in their lifespan that they do become concentrated, and that you can monitor their populations. Otherwise, you really have no idea how many of them there are. There are many efforts out there, Christmas bird count, breeding bird surveys, and they do a fair job with some species, you know, but you've got to have geographic coverage to really make those results meaningful. But migration, on the other hand, is a time of year when you really can monitor, you know, regional scale populations at one or, you know, a few sites. So it's very meaningful in terms of understanding long-term population trends, you know, the ups and downs of their populations. So.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's something that we talk a lot about in the short film about the Lucky Peak migration site, is just the importance of collecting baseline data. And, you know, 20 years ago, you know, you guys probably had no idea what sort of the wide variety of research questions that you would be able to use this data to answer, you know, 20, 30 years down the road.
Yeah.
So, very neat stuff. So the Lucky Peak site started out as just a raptor migration site.
Right? It did, yes.
And then sort of over the years, you built up this songbird monitoring and owl banding project. How did those other two components, how were they sort of initiated?
Well, we noticed right away, you know, in the first few years that we had crews staying at Lucky Peak during the fall season, that there was a great abundance and, you know, diversity of songbirds at the site, and a fairly regular turnover, so that one day there might be, you know, a bunch of one species there, and a few days later they'd be gone and be replaced by some other species. And so we got this idea that in addition to the raptors, that the same, you know, the same geography and habitat conditions might be also concentrating other types of birds. And so we started a mist netting program for songbirds, I think during our fourth or fifth season on the peak, and that was very successful. You know, our capture rates were high, the diversity of species was very great. I think we caught over 60 species the first season. So So it was very successful. We also noticed at night, because our crews were camping up there, we could hear these small forest owls during the migration period, you know, calling back and forth in trees. And we had an idea fairly early on. We started experimenting with trying to trap the owls, and again, proved to be very successful, and you know, successful enough that it warranted starting a long-term monitoring study of those species as well.
Very neat, very neat. So, I'm wondering if maybe you can give me a few examples of some of the research that has come out of these long-term data sets that you guys have been collecting over the past 20 years.
Yeah, you bet. I think most recently we've been looking at how climate change affects these the different species and by group of birds as well, how it affects their timing, migration timing, and other factors like that. We've also looked at how weather on a regional and a local scale both affect the timing of migration and the kind of the daily ebb and flow of migration at the site. But we've also collaborated with researchers from other sites throughout the West and combined data sets to look at population trends, you know, over a regional scale. Mm-hmm. And about 4 or 5 years ago, we did that very thing with our raptor count data. Mm-hmm. We combined our Hawkwatch data with about 10 other sites from the West. Mm-hmm. And for the first time ever, really looked at population trends on a regional scale. So, yeah, those are a few examples.
Okay, so before we sort of jump into some of the other research programs that IBO is involved with, let's chat for a bit about the education side of what's going on up at the Lucky Peak Migration Site. And, you know, we've talked about the importance of this long-term data set up there, but you know, when I go up there, you know, the time that I spend up there, you know, sort of the most obvious and immediate impact that you can see is, you know, that there's always groups of kids up there, right?
Yeah.
There's always lots of people up there, and there's always people who are just really obviously excited and energized at the opportunity to see a bird up close in the thing, you know. I mean, that's what really stands out to me. From the time that I've spent up there. And I guess I'm wondering how the educational component of this migration research site has been developed over time.
Yeah, you bet. Well, I think you hit the nail right on the head. It's a great opportunity for watchable wildlife viewing, and that's what really sucks the public in and, you know, grabs their interest, because they do have the opportunity to see, you know, many, many birds of many different kinds and ages and sexes. I mean, a great, great variety of birds up close and in the hand. You know, we trap 6,000 to 7,000 birds and, band them each year. And so we really pride ourselves on providing that kind of experience for the public, kind of a one in a, you know, chance of a lifetime opportunity in nature. And the other thing is it's natural, you know, it's fairly natural. It's not a nature center. It's not a, you know, it's not artificial. It's really out there in nature. These are wild birds. We're trapping them for our research for a very brief period, and the public gets to look through that window and see that, you know, see that in action. And that's what really captivates their attention, and that, I think, provides a great learning environment for us to weave in concepts of conservation and, you know, importance of habitats and things like that to birds. I mean, and we don't preach that stuff, but like I say, it's a great opportunity to weave those concepts in and have them be assimilated by the visitors and the kids just by nature of being there and being part of that experience.
Yeah, absolutely. And I just love that you guys are so inviting to the general public up there. And, you know, I've heard you guys tell stories about people who didn't even realize that there was a research site up there, and they just happen to wander through, and they end up getting hooked on birds, you know, and bird migration, and just love it and get really involved in it, which I think is fantastic. And it just seems like a really neat thing to be sort of, you know, so involved in both, you know, both the research and the education. And I actually my very first job as a young aspiring field biologist was at a banding station. And it's so funny, the attitude that we had at that banding station that I was working at. I mean, it was very close to a hiking trail, but we had sort of intentionally hidden the banding station so that, you know, the tourists who came through there couldn't see it, because we didn't want to deal with, you know, we felt like it was too much to deal with, you know, the dealing with the public in addition to collecting the data that we were doing. And that's just sort of the way that that site was run.
Yeah.
And I think there's such a great benefit to inviting the public to see, you know, and observe the research that's going on. So it's a fantastic program. And anyone in the Boise area who hasn't had a chance to get up there yet should definitely find the opportunity to do that.
They should. Yeah, I think that's a real common attitude at a lot of research sites, where the researchers think that their work is most important. But we've always felt from the very beginning that the results of our research, you know, really are kind of meaningless unless the general public know about them and understand them and understand the significance of them. So we've always married research and education hand in hand. I think it's they each, you know, they are each equally important.
Absolutely. So I do want to talk a little bit about some of the other research projects that Intermountain Bird Observatory has going on aside from these migration count sites. So when did you guys first start branching out, expanding beyond the migration research component of what IBA does?
Quite a while ago, kind of in the beginning, we started to become useful to various local agencies, land management agencies, as a resource for conducting surveying, monitoring, inventorying of birds, mostly migratory birds. Mm-hmm. But that program has really grown in the last 5 or 6 years. Mm-hmm. We've really made a name for ourselves, I think, and established a track record in terms of being a great resource for collecting any kind of data or conducting research on migratory birds on public or private lands. So that program has expanded quite a bit. We're now including, right now we have projects on breeding long-billed curlews, not just in the local area, but throughout the Intermountain region, Montana, Wyoming, hopefully Utah too, I believe. But we also study northern goshawks. That's a Forest Service, they call it a management indicator species. We've been doing that for several years right here in Idaho on the Sawtooth National Forest, monitoring nest occupancy and success, and actually building upon that with graduate studies and building other components into that project. So those are just a couple of examples of the other projects we have going on in the state.
Mm-hmm. Fantastic, yeah. And I just want to sort of touch on the long-billed curlew research that you mentioned. I had the opportunity to get out with a crew from IBO for to track one of the long-billed curlews that was a part of your study last year, and get the opportunity to kind of observe the process of, you know, attaching the backpack radio transmitter on
right.
there and see the bird up close in the hand. And man, what a bizarre looking creature that animal is.
They are. They are.
I just can't, and it seems so out of place, out here in this, you know, sort of Great Basin Desert landscape, this shorebird with this bill, you know, longer than its body. Was there something specific that sort of inspired you guys to latch onto that species in particular as a study species?
Yeah, we started close to 10 years ago now, monitoring again for a local land management agency, the Bureau of Land Management. We started monitoring a local population of these birds and found out quickly that their breeding population had declined, 50 or more percent. And so that kind of sparked questions and more study from us and expansion of the project to look kind of more regionally at what's going on with long-billed curlews in this region. So there, it turns out there are a species that really aren't doing well, in the region. They're declining for various reasons. I think we're still trying to flesh out exactly what all those reasons are. But, again, like you say, it's a very bizarre looking bird, but a bird that I think the public can relate to. And we've just received some grant monies to really, again, marry our education program with that research program and start kind of on a small scale in local communities to try and educate the communities about that species and about the perils of that species and why it's declining, in hopes that that perhaps some attitudes and some practices, can change that will benefit the curlews and increase their breeding success in the future.
Right, that's fantastic. Yeah. And good to hear that you guys are involved in sort of a education component mm-hmm. as well as a research component. I'll definitely, we've got a neat clip of that long-billed curlew that I mentioned being released, which I'll definitely link up in the show notes. All right, so the next thing I want to talk about, and this is something that we sort of touched on back when we shot the interviews for that IBO video, which we'll also have linked to this episode here. But at that point, and this was a few years back, you guys had just entered talks about acquiring this piece of property along the Boise River to utilize, I think, as both a research and an education center to sort of expand this migratory banding program that you have going up at Lincoln Peak. So what's the status of this project now?
Sure. Well, I'm happy to say that just within the last couple of months, the university has actually closed on the property that we had discussed a few years ago. It took over a year of negotiations with between our legal department and the sellers, but we finally did it, and we finally own that property. Another exciting development on that front is we've just recently brought on a new staff member to IBO and hired full-time education director, and that's Heidi Ware, and that's going to be one of her main job duties, is to start building partnerships within the local community and actually using that property for education and building a research program close, similar to what we have up at Lucky Peak. And this property is just perfect for this type of work, on migratory birds. It's along bird migration corridor. There are there's a great diversity of birds that breed there and spend the winter. It's accessible year-round, accessible to school buses, so we can build year-round programming to sort of take advantage of those natural resources and bring in the local kids. We're hoping and expecting to go from about reaching maybe 2,000 to 2,500 folks each year up at Lucky Peak to more than 10,000 a year at this new site.
Wow.
Of its accessibility, its year-round accessibility.
Yeah.
So we're very excited and still just in the baby stages of kind of building this program, but you wait and see. 4 or 5 years, it'll be a fantastic resource for the community.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's definitely an exciting time for you guys, I'm sure.
Mm-hmm.
And it is it is a super neat spot along the Boise River. It's a spot that I've spent some time hiking through, and it took me a while to realize, you know, it was just recently that I actually realized, like, oh, this is the area, this is the spot that that you guys have been working to acquire to implement this project. It's just a great spot, very close to Boise. So, like you said, it just dramatically expands the education opportunity.
Yeah, for sure.
Great. Well, that's about all I had for you here, Greg. But it's great to catch up with you and sort of get an update on all the projects that you guys have going on. Especially since, like I said at the beginning, that video that we produced in collaboration with you guys, it was the sort of the first. Our first foray into these shorter documentary videos, which we sort of later, dubbed as our Eyes on Conservation series, but that was that video was sort of the seed, that sort of inspired us to continue telling these stories in that format, focusing on local nonprofits and groups that are involved in both education and research, like you guys are.
Thanks. You did a great job, and thank you for your continued interest in the IBO and your continued interest in getting the word out about IBO. It can only help. Can only help us in the long run. So thank you.
Yeah, you bet. Great talking with you as usual.
All right, that was our interview with Greg Kaltenecker from the Intermountain Bird Observatory. We touched on a lot of neat stuff in that interview, including IBO's recent project working with the long-billed curlew, a fascinating and bizarre-looking bird species. As I mentioned in the interview, I was able to observe and shoot some footage of the IBO crew trapping and attaching a transmitter to one of the curlews in that study. So be sure to check out the show notes where we'll have a link to some of that curlew footage. And of course, I can't sign off before saying just one more time how special IBO's research site up at Lucky Peak really is. If you live in the Boise area and you haven't been up there to visit during the fall migration season, this is something you absolutely must do. It's an amazing opportunity to see these birds up close and to actually have the opportunity to hold them in your hand and release them after the crew has put on the bands and taken all of their measurements. Of course, fall migration season for this year has just ended, but you can check out our video about the Lucky Peak migration site, which we'll be re-releasing as a part of our companion Eyes on Conservation video podcast. So if you haven't seen the film yet, be sure to check that out and subscribe to that companion video podcast. And as usual, we'll have all kinds of relevant links to the research and education programs run by IBO up on the show notes. You can find those show notes at wildlensinc.org/blog/EOC8. That's wildlensinc.org/blog/EOC8. Now, next month on the podcast, we'll have a very special episode to start off the new year. We'll be releasing our short film about conservation of the greater sage grouse. This film has been a long time in the making, and we're very excited for it to finally get released. Sage grouse conservation is a very controversial topic right now, largely due to U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service's decision to preclude the species from listing on the endangered species list back in 2010. 2015, however, is the year that the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service will take another look at this species, and many believe that it will finally get listed on the ESA. So we thought that it was appropriate to start off the new year with our film about this emblematic bird of the Great Basin Desert. So I sure hope everyone who's listening now will tune in next month. We'll have extended interviews here on the podcast with sage grouse experts. And if you subscribe via iTunes or your podcatcher of choice, that next episode will automatically download to your phone or tablet, which is pretty neat. So thanks again for joining us. This is your host, Matt Podolsky, signing off.